What's up, everybody? This episode of the Smoking Tire Podcast is brought to you by Bespoke Post and their boxes of awesome. Listen, as you get back outdoors to explore the world again, climb out of your hibernatory hole, go start seeing people, doing things, all the stuff you haven't done over the last 15 months, take Bespoke Post's box of awesome collections with you. These are collections for guys that are themed around different lifestyles and guaranteed to upgrade your life. Whether you're out taming the wilderness, riding motorcycles, traveling to luxury hotels, or taking your home bar to pro level heights, Bespoke Post only sends guys the best stuff every month. No matter what you're into, Box of Awesome has you covered. From style and grooming goods to barware, cooking tools, and outdoor gear, Box of Awesome has collections for every part of your life. The last awesome box that they sent me had a couple really cool folding knives in it. It had this thing, like a heat-resistant glove to move logs around in a fire. It had a really nice DOP kit, and it had this portable water treatment thing. So if you're in the woods, you can turn dirty water into clean water. It was cool. To get started and see what you're into, take the quiz at boxofawesome.com, and your answers will help them pick the right box of awesome for you. They release new boxes every month across a ton of different categories. It's a great gift idea for guys in your life. It's free to sign up. You can skip a month or cancel anytime. Each box costs only $45, but has over $70 worth of gear inside. So get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com. Enter code SMOKINGTIRE at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com with code SMOKINGTIRE for 20% off your first box. Boxofawesome.com, code SMOKINGTIRE at checkout for 20% off. All right, check me out. When you are shaped less than absolutely perfectly, it is really, really hard to find the right pants. And believe me, if anyone knows anything about not being shaped perfectly, it's me. I got big, meaty thighs. I got kind of an average waist given my height. I mean, obviously, I'm not thin, but proportionally. And then I have, like, relatively lean calves. It's, like, hard to, like, make pants fit right exactly, especially when you're talking about, like, cool loungewear. Like, and I love sweatpants, I love loungewear, but I'd rather be caught dead than wearing that stuff really outside of the house. And I don't want my neighbors to see my raggedy old sweats, you know? I want to be kind of stylish, right? So that's why we're checking out Public Rec this week. They make leisure wear in waist and inseam sizes because comfort starts with a better fit. You don't have to size up to make one thing work and then other things get too baggy. They got the all-day, everyday pants. It's a more stylish alternative to sweatpants and a more comfortable alternative to jeans. I'm talking about pants you can wear at a restaurant. You could probably get away with them at the office. You could certainly wear them out and chilling, and it doesn't seem like, oh, yeah, you're wearing sweatpants. It's like you're wearing stylish pants that aren't jeans. The all-day, everyday pants are really cool. They're great for lounging at home, looking all right for work, heading to the bar, or anywhere pants that it's a jean-like pant should be worn, but where you really wish you were wearing sweatpants comfort. You feel me? It's got all the things you want out of a garment. Breathable, stretchy, moisture-wicking fabric. You can wear them 24/7, and they stay looking brand new. They got zip pockets so stuff doesn't fall out. And they come in 9 different colors, one for each day of the week, and then some. They've got incredibly comfortable shorts, t-shirts, Henleys, polos, hoodies, jackets, and even golf gear. And they just launched a women's line as well. So now anyone listening can enjoy Public Rec's game-changing fabrics in their wardrobe. I will admit that when I'm climbing in and out of the old cars, going to Cars and Coffee Sunday morning, I have always kind of wanted to wear sweatpants. But I'm not really going to do it because people, like, take my picture when I go to this stuff, to be perfectly honest. So I keep it with the jeans. But now with Public Rec, I am going to rock these all-day, everyday pants that are not sweatpants for sure, but they are that comfortable. This is, you know what they're really good for? Seriously, road trips. On a road trip or flying, These are two activities where you really want to wear sweatpants, but if you've got to do stuff at the other end of the road trip or the other end of the flight, that could be a problem. That's why you really want to get into this public rec stuff, because if you got to do something comfortable like a road trip or a flight, but then work at the other end of it, that's what's really awesome. So as the world's opening back up, make sure you've got clothes that fit and are as flexible as your life is. Public rec rarely discounts, but right now they have an exclusive offer for Smoking Tire listeners. Go to publicrec.com. That's publicrec.com. Use promo code TIRE to receive 10% off. That's publicrec.com. Promo code TIRE for 10% off your order. And of course, we're brought to you by Tradecraft Farms, the best smokables, vapables, and edibles legally available in the beautiful state of California. These guys are on the cutting edge scientifically, whether it's CBDs and ointments and stuff like that. And they're also on the cutting edge of things you didn't even know had a cutting edge, like joints. They make 24-karat gold joints, white gold joints. They've got joints that are literally rolled in rose petals. It's the ballerest shit ever if you really wanted to roll up on somebody. Pun intended, people. Follow them on Instagram, Tradecraft Farms. If you're in the Los Angeles area, ask for them by name at your local dispensary or visit their brand store in Port Hueneme. It's a pretty badass store, frankly, if you're looking for an excuse for a drive. Tradecraft Farms on the gram, and tell them the Smoking Tire sent you. We would really appreciate that to keep this old freight train rolling on. All right, folks, on this episode of the Smoking Tire Podcast, my pal Freddy Hernandez, a.k.a. Tavarish, a.k.a. one of the three hosts of the new series Car Trek by Auto Tempest, which you can watch on the Tavarish YouTube channel right now. We talk about old broken exotics, we talk about what it takes to fix a McLaren, and we talk about what it is like to rip off, I mean recreate, Top Gear on YouTube. Freddy Hernandez on the Smoking Tire Podcast. What's going on, buddy? Nice talking to you.
Yeah, man. So, you know, I got the Car Trek stuff going on. Are we live? Are we doing this now? Or are we like,
yeah, we've
oh,
been.
This is the show.
This is it.
We've
is
been on the show.
Yeah. I intro you from the comfort of my couch, and then we just drop in to the program.
So a lot has been going on, and we just released Car Trek on my channel. So that's sort of our homage to old Top Gear, you know, that sort of thing, where me, Tyler Hoover, and Ed Bullion, we go on these like kind of funny adventures with cheap cars, or I'm not going to say cheap cars in this one because Ed totally cheated and he got something that's not very cheap at all.
Dude, number 17 on trending right now. You're looking good.
Yeah. I was super surprised. The first one got on trending too. It's it doesn't, for those of you that are like looking at that, like it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't actually translate to any views. It's just kind of like, that's nice, but like literally I'm looking at the views and it's just like this. Like it just, nothing happens.
It just makes, no, it's literally, you know what happens, dude? If you get on trending, you probably have a decent social media following, and you then screenshot that you're trending and then post it on your social media, and you it's that trending.
It's a J.D. Power and Associates.
Gold medal. Yeah. Yes. You then take it and then you kickstart your little marketing team again, right? Because you've already, you did your first round of marketing. Now you're on trending. You screenshot that you're trending. Boom, boom. You come back. Now you're number 11 on trending. And then you just bounce it around and you just like, you literally are hacky sacking your video on trending. It's brilliant.
Listen, I wish it worked like that where you just like bumped you up. Because man, I would abuse that system, but yeah, it's exactly the way you say it. It's like now we have I don't know, now our video is the best in class of, you know, towing or something, and it doesn't really mean anything, but it means something for like the crew, which I can say, hey, we have two videos on trending and they're doing, you know, they're doing pretty well, and we had a ton of fun doing it. So it's something that I hope we can do in the future. We're actually about to film our fifth one in about a week's time. So nice. We're going to do that. Yeah.
Wow.
Turn them out like a $2 hoe. The thing is, like, it was Ferraris. You've gotten to Ferraris now. Like,
well, the first one was like cheap
incentive. You now have an incentive to trash Ferraris.
That's great.
So, in that second episode, we did a challenge where, you know, the trope is that people don't want to talk badly about Ferraris. I mean, this happened with the, you know, the Chris Harris thing where, you know, he was the only one that would trash Ferraris on a regular basis. And Ferrari really, really didn't like that. So we said, like, since you guys are not automotive journalists.
Actually what happened there, but go on.
Sure. But what I'm saying, you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
Well, I just want to say that wasn't the thing that Chris did, but okay.
Okay.
Chris
okay.
called out Ferrari for juicing their mm-hmm. press cars.
Okay.
And then they didn't give him a car for
a long
years,
time until
years.
Yeah, well, until the thing happens maybe. That happened, which is the person in charge of PR retires, the person who replaces them doesn't give a fuck about what happened 5 years ago, mm-hmm. and then you're back in the game.
Right. And the biggest person in cars needs to drive
back in the game, baby. Yeah. No, he wrote that article in 2010. He drove a Ferrari F12 for us on Drive in 2013. Oh, the ban was not that long.
Oh, it's true.
Yeah, it was not.
Sure, but
not
the trope exists. But the trope exists that you cannot speak ill of a high quality, you know, like high end manufacturer, especially Ferrari, because they get their panties in a bunch, right?
True. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that if you are not in that club, it can be tough to deal with Ferrari from a press cars. It's a tough thing. There are rules. There are strings attached that aren't necessarily mm-hmm. there for other cars. And by the way, some of the ones that Chris Harris talked about don't really exist anymore. Like the one where you can't drive a car that's not from Ferrari. Mm-hmm. Like they really, what they really mean is they don't want you to like if you drive a car that's like not the newest, hottest fucking shit, like embargo beating thing. Mm-hmm. They don't really give a shit about anything. That's what it's like. You can't embargo beat with a private
car.
They
get mad when you skip the line by driving a private car.
Yeah. Which is annoying, but like it's not entirely unreasonable. But like,
sure.
But on the other hand of that, like, is like the SF90. Like mm-hmm. the SF90 like wasn't in America. And then by the way, today I got invited to drive it. Chaperoned, like the Bugatti thing where the dude's gotta go with you. But I did get invited to drive it today. But like Doug had a video up like a month ago. Mm-hmm. You know, Jay Leno did a video and like that dude like David Lee was like lending out his car like a press car.
Oh, absolutely.
So he might have trouble buying a new one.
And what can Ferrari do if they literally can't provide a car during the time frame, you know what I mean? At that point, like, you don't really have a leg to stand on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But anyway,
so with Ferrari,
your idea was that you should buy Ferraris so that you could shit on them? Is that what you're getting at?
No, not really. That wasn't the entire point. But that was just one challenge. The challenge was that we have to spend some time and talk about the negative aspects of our Ferraris, which is not hard to do. All our cars are used. Ferrari's not going to care. But I was actually, since you're talking about the SF90, I noticed that is like now they're kind of like big hypercar. That's like 1,000 horsepower or whatever, but it's like $500,000, which is not like, it's not cheap.
Well, I think it's a matter of positioning. I think it's just like, it's not, I think it's somewhere in between. It's not quite, it's like, where do we draw the line hypercar? I don't really know where that line to me is pretty vague, but like, it's not the LaFerrari replacement that you think it is. You know what I mean? Like it's positioned above the F8, but it's not a true LaFerrari replacement.
So they don't want to start.
It's weird because in every metric it would be, you know?
Yeah. We're looking at above rear 3/4 where the parts that don't look exactly like a Lotus Evora GT look really fabulous. So that means like a quarter of the car is fabulous and the rest of it is basically a Lotus Evora GT. It's pretty though. Nothing wrong with a Lotus Evora GT.
You like the Lotus Evora GT, right?
I like it objectively. There are certainly some quirks that I find to be mildly annoying, and I saw, but it's. I think it's a nice thing. Yeah, Zach just had one for a little bit as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it. It does have problems, but it also overall, I think we're gonna miss it when it's gone.
Yeah.
I think it's a great press car, and I think it's a great car that you can buy for 50
That's
grand.
That's the funniest fucking line, Freddie. I think it's a great press car.
It is. Because everybody
if I can drive it for a week and it doesn't cost me a dime and I can just hand it back.
Absolutely. It's a great car that you get for free. But like, if you actually have to pay money for it, it's not that good. Like, you start to, like, this is the perfect car. For, and this is not my saying, I think Ed Bullion told me this. He's like, it's a perfect car for people that don't believe that Germany exists. Or like, it's really...
It's a perfect car for people that remember the Holocaust. Like, my grandmother would be like, sweetie, this is the ideal...
Yeah, this is the Allies mid-engine sports car.
Yeah. But it's really like, it's a good car, but there's so much that you give up. I mean, it's more than $100,000. And I know that you say that like, you're not getting these cars for $100,000, like they're selling for less than that. But like, why don't they just advertise it as less than that? Because right now it is like Cayman GT4 territory, and it makes no sense why you would get that car over a GT4.
I don't know. Is there a tax deduction if you advertise it for 120 but actually sell it for 75? Do you somehow get to claim a special, like, is there some
you can
math?
A loss.
I'm not a financial whiz by any means. Is there some math to be done there that I don't know about? I don't know. Why would you advertise a car for $115,000 and the real world transaction prices are like 90?
I mean, because
it's
you
called money laundering,
and just goes, "I would like to. I want that car. How much? I don't care. Yeah, that's what you hope for, but you have to move."
But they
them.
Don't. Yeah, that's the. It's a tough business. I don't know. I think they're. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see that this Avaya thing, this electric thing they've
good.
Got. It looks very cool. It does look very cool, and I saw that video of it testing. It looks pretty G.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for it. I really am rooting for. And Radford, I'm rooting for those guys too. Mm. Coach building these fucking things. Good for you. Really going off into the weeds.
I love anybody that's really kind of putting themselves out there and thinking outside the box. But I can't imagine that Lotus is like making any money. So like, where's it coming from?
China.
Because they're developing.
It's coming from Geely.
Oh.
Yeah, in China.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
According to Lotus, I met some really nice people that worked there. They were very enthusiastic, and they said that they've got this was last year. They said they've got a 5 or 10 year plan, you know, where it's going to be sort of like Volvo, where they can develop these products and get them, you know, and be Lotus, but you know, but not be constantly worrying about running out of money. Except, oh, by the way, you have to make it all EVs. That's the thing. So that's the catch, you know, and I'm not sure what the business is, but it seems like Lotus is going to live for like 10 years at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They'll be
around. You think 10 years? I think in 5 years, they're going to have a massive restructuring, and they're going to do the same thing McLaren did, which is like sell their company. At least sell grounds that that they own. Yeah.
Yeah, but
sell
Lotus
the building.
Is
and
like,
then,
Lotus is in like a shed. Like nobody's like, they're going to be able to put the office for sale and it'll be like, you know,
like a tough shed.
Just like a little real estate company will take it over or something.
So what do you think? I've been seeing a lot of manufacturers come out with EV announcements, and proclaiming that in the next 10, 15 years, they're going to get rid of all ICE cars. Like, what do you think about that? I talked a lot about that last time and like how the timeline isn't exactly realistic, but now it seems like it's kind of supercharged, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah. I think saying it gets you on page one of the newspaper, making that announcement, the press release, walking it back a couple years later when you can't quite meet those unrealistic projections is like on a page 11 story. And that strategy has been employed by all kinds of companies, individuals, people with something where they're trying to shift, where the public is sort of driving them, but they really kind of, it's this dance, you know what I mean? Of like the retail sales are not what's driving EV manufacturers' EV product cycles right now. It's really like the public's like attitude. More so than their actual buying habits.
Yeah, they've warmed to it, but the wallets aren't quite there yet. The take rate is increasing, but it's still very low.
Yeah.
But haven't you heard that Tesla's autopilot is 10 times more safe than any other car on the road today? And haven't you heard that, Matt?
Very soon, I've heard it. Along with their solar-powered supercharging centers.
I really got into it with these guys. And I don't want to talk about, you know, the exchange that I had with these Tesla people, but I really have a appreciation for what you go through whenever you say anything about Elon Musk, because, oh my God, I didn't know that they existed.
Yeah, no, like, they got Google Alerts set up. They're ready to go. They're fucking ready to go, dude.
It's real cult behavior.
Yeah, it's
and crazy. Like, you can't say anything that's even remotely just kind of like realistic. Like, I said was yes, you know, Tesla's autopilot, like, let's say for sake of argument it's safer. You have to take that data and then control for all the variables, okay?
Yeah.
To see if it's one to one. Apple, you know, you can't compare apples to oranges. And they're like, oh, why are you Tesla Q, or, you know, why are you rooting for Elon to fail?
Right.
I'm like, dude, you're nuts.
There's a really good list, and I saw it on Terry Canfield's Twitter, who was a great Twitter follow. I can't remember who wrote it. I'm not going to attribute it correctly, but it's like the list that basically is like a checklist for like cult-like behavior. And one of the things that a cult leader does is, you know, you flood the zone, which is like you disseminate many, many lies that are, it's too tough to nitpick them one at a time. And then anyone who tries to, you create an us versus them. Mm-hmm. You know, I have the only truth, and everyone is, they're against you. You know what I mean? It's big oil or big whatever. It's a deep state. It's a big conspiracy. And you position yourself as the lone wolf hero. It's a real idol worship.
You create yourself
kind of
like as a victim, no matter what. Yeah.
That works. Then you set up an army of mixed, real believers, people who are not believers but are being incredibly rewarded financially for playing this game, and bots.
Mm-hmm. A lot of bots.
It's the 1-2-3 combo, really. Yes. And you swirl that bitch around a little bit. Let it ride.
Yes.
Occasionally I fall for it. You know, I should, and you should, and we all should block and move on.
So what I do is I go on Twitter. First of all, I deleted my Twitter app thinking that would do something, and absolutely didn't. And I go on my browser on my phone onto Twitter, and every time I go on there, I feel a little bit like I feel worse about myself.
Yes.
You know, I feel like I'm a lesser person for doing that, because I know that I'm going there to get pissed off. That's it. I don't go there to feel happy. It just goes into my like that
it's
weird
like anger heroin.
You know? Absolutely. So I really want to stop.
I slipped
that
recently, and I got put Twitter back on my phone like a month ago, and I didn't have any social media on my phone for like over a year. First, I put Instagram back on my phone. Mm-hmm. It was kind of okay. Wasn't really bad. Then I put Twitter back on my phone. I made it.
Twitter's the bad one now.
And I woke up feeling fine. Mm-hmm. Pulled up my phone, still in bed. Looked at Twitter for 5 minutes, felt like horrible, like just this sinking feeling of doom.
Oh, yeah.
And I fucking deleted Twitter off. This was like yesterday, by the way. And I deleted Twitter off my phone again and Instagram, and deleted both of them off my phone.
They're going to talk about this in 100 years, like how the entire human populace was utterly just glued to their phones and devices, and they had to do this because of some, like, this is tailor-made for just being addicted, and it sucks.
One of our strongest response systems, like in our body, is the fear response. Mm-hmm. So it's like more than lust, it's more than food, it's more than all those things, because you're like, I'm protecting. We're wired to look out for danger, right? Because that's how you kept yourself alive when you were a lizard and shit.
Yeah.
So now, if you look at these things that, you know, you're following historians, and you are reading Kevin Kruse or other people who are analyzing situations and then presenting the facts that counter them, but what they're looking for are basically danger. Like, this is misinformation we're seeing. So you are reading Twitter and basically seeing saber-toothed tigers, lions, lava, and your brain is just lighting the fuck up in the response to that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just sighing and saying it's not good.
Well, so what I've kind of adopted, and what I try to do, and I absolutely fail at this, you know, most of the time, is you learn, I mean, you've been a public figure way longer than I have. Like, you've been in the spotlight for a long time. And that's not saying that you're like, you're super old or anything, but it's just, you know, you know more than I do.
Nice walk back, Freddie.
Yes, yes. It's something where you can no longer just kind of speak your mind the way you would speak to a friend. Right. And that's, you know, anytime you're being put under scrutiny, there's going to be people that can misconstrue what you're saying. So I think the best thing to do is not to shut up. Like there's a good way, you know, there's some arguments to be had to just, you know, shutting up on all social media, unless it has something directly to do with you. But I think, like, I've tried to do something where I never condemn somebody or condemn an idea. And I try to uplift people, but obviously that fails because, you know, then you have to dunk on somebody that needs dunking on, and that's Twitter.
That's the other response, the dunk response. I do it, but like, I probably delete just as many as I send through. There's a bunch where I'm like, I'm not even gonna do this. Just, mm-hmm. And then I write it, and then hitting mm-hmm. delete feels just as good as hitting send. Mm. Once you've written,
you're like, I'm not going to change their mind.
I'm not just, yeah. And you go, all I'm doing is frustrating myself right now. This is terrible.
Okay, but let's talk about something that's cheery.
Careers already to not use social media. Like Dave Chappelle's like, I don't need social media. It's like, yeah, you sell out stadiums, Dave. So of course you don't need social media. You're the biggest show in 2002.
Right. But a lot of casting right now is based on your following.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
If you're not Dave.
Absolutely. Everybody's so above it all when they have, you know, 16 million followers.
Of course.
Yeah.
You got 20 million followers. You go, I don't need this.
Well, it's the same people that go, you know, when they have millions of dollars in their bank account and they can go do whatever for the rest of their lives. They're like, you know what? I don't need money. You know?
Yeah.
Of course you don't.
Yeah. Yo, I don't know how we turned left off trashing Ferraris on YouTube, but can you explain to me real quick how it is that you and Tyler seemingly ended up with actual cheap Ferraris and Ed just showed up in a 599? Because that doesn't seem like real.
So I will maintain that I'm the only person that showed up with a cheap Ferrari because Tyler's car was like the top echelon of Camry. If you can get there, like the most I can get a Camry to, like using Toyota's whatever tool they have on their site. Yeah, their configurator. It was like 42 grand, but like if you get, you know, the true coat and you can get like all the floor mats and all that stuff, then maybe you can get it to 45, which is what Tyler spent on his.
Did you 45? Guys, real quick, for the structure of this shoot, did you guys have a budget that you were supposed to spend and then now you're talking about how they exceeded it, or was it just like find a cheap, did you guys all have a broad definition of cheap?
So it's always a more broad definition means that we can get more interesting cars. So we said for the price of a Camry. Now, Camry could be $500, you know, used beater, or it could be brand new TRD, top of the line V6, $45,000.
Hear that being stretched to the maximum.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So
I just like that you all showed up and you're like, oh, I meant used Camry. And Tyler and Ed were like, oh, we meant new.
Yeah. So actually, that's what happened in the first contract because
I thought you meant the Camry NASCAR.
I thought you meant the Camry factory.
You didn't mean the cup car.
Did you mean the price of the licensing NASCAR would have been a great Camry?
That would have been a great argument. Like the NASCAR is what, 300 grand?
Yeah.
You know, Ed could have showed up with a piece there or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Somebody needs to hire me as a writer. I come up with these bits. Very competitive rates.
So the idea was I was supposed to get the one that was like kind of middle of the road if you were to get a new Camry. So about 30 grand. Tyler was supposed to get the top, you know, whatever, 45 grand. And then Ed was going to do some financial trickery and say, well, if I got a Camry, what would the monthly payment be? And then what could I stretch a monthly payment on an exotic to be? And then, you know, have those two merge, even though, you know.
So it's like, what if I did a 24-month finance on a Camry? Camry versus 144-month finance on a 599.
They're both $500. Really, yeah.
Yeah, that's some real math trickery right there. I don't know. Yeah. I would have gone with, I think, I actually think the The NASCAR one is more succinct and is a better sell.
Sure, sure. I think that would have been interesting. But in any case, I mean, God of 5'9" was an amazing car. I didn't really appreciate it until I saw it in the flesh and then saw what it can do on the track. But, you know, for $100,000, would I buy one? Probably not. You know, for $45,000, would I buy what Tyler bought, you know, a 4.56? Probably not. But, you know, that's just kind of me. But I think the 308 definitely looks the best. But, man, that was a piece of junk. I don't like it at all. It is like, it's probably just mine because you have a 328, right? And yours is like really good.
I mean, yeah, it is. I have a 328 and it is good. It's nice. It works properly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It took some things to get it there, but like, I would not call it shitty. No, I think it's pretty nice. You sent me
what
pictures
I didn't
of yours.
Like,
yours looks shitty. I mean, it did look pretty shitty. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I didn't like about the 308 was, well, first of all, the seating position is garbage. So I don't fit it in at all.
No contest
I mean,
like, there. That's true.
Yeah.
They didn't get seating rights.
Absolute trash.
2003?
The 360. The 360 is the first of those Ferraris that has like real seats, or the 550, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
They all have wonky seating positions before then. Yeah.
But the thing is, I mean, on mine, nothing worked. Nothing worked. And I had no gauges. I had no windows. It was a truly horrifying place to be. Plus, it was really slow, like super slow. So I had cams in mine. It had like different carbs, but the carbs were tuned super rich. So it just like popped and crackled, you know, like all the time on Excel and D-cell.
Yeah. A friend of mine's got a carb 308 that shoots mad fire.
It's fun until you realize that you're not going anywhere. And it's like, dude, we tried to race like all three cars, and it was, I don't think I, like, if you would have put like a bone stock PT Cruiser next to me, I think it would have blown my doors off. It was so abysmal. Yeah.
Well, and it was a carbed car. I mean, it must have. I thought the carbed cars of the 308s were like reasonable, were like the quicker ones.
The good ones are.
No. Yeah, good one. Yours might have just been pretty fucking tired.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I did the timing belts on it. I did, you know, we tried to get kind of dialed in, but the problem is, you know, this mine was worked on by like this Ford shop, like this Ford custom shop that made a bunch of land speed cars in the 60s and 70s. Uh-huh. And they didn't know much about Ferraris, but they put stuff like a distributor from like a Bronco 5.8 liter, which apparently fits, like there's an adapter plate that works. So it was super easy for me to find that part. But then, you know, it just like this car ran like crap the entire time. It would leak everything, like oil, coolant, just everything.
Yeah.
And I could, like, after the filming was finished, I could not wait to get rid of that car. I hated it so much.
Well, that's fair. I mean, if you bought a shitty car and it turned out it was shitty, yeah, I'd want to get rid of it too. I mean, my car had some issues when I bought it, for sure, but I liked how it drove once it warmed up. A lot of the issues presented themselves when it was cold, and then a lot of the other shit was like, Donnie was like just in there and was like, oh, by the way, this is fucked, and oh, by the way, this is fucked, and oh, by the... Mm-hmm. And it was stuff where I couldn't tell you from the driver's seat that, you know, he did so much at once that I couldn't say, well, fixing this one thing made an enormous difference because he did so many things, but like...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. When you come to L.A. next, I mean, you should drive my car. My car is obviously not fast by, you know, modern supercar standards, but, like, it definitely feels like it makes the advertised 280 horsepower. It really does.
So can we talk a little bit about gated manuals? Because I've been, you know, like, over the years, it's just been kind of... This stupid trope that gated manuals are so much better than every other manual. And the reason why they'd made gated manuals is because they couldn't understand how to make them without gates. Like, if you take the gate off a Ferrari, it breaks the transmission. You can't. People don't know that. Like, it's like now on a modern car, like if you have a LP640 or a Gallardo or whatever. Like, cars don't need that, you know? Like, it's actually faster right. if you take that gate off.
Yeah, the gate was like a map to your gears.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like you couldn't find them. And so they were like, here it is, and here it is, and here it is. And now you can yeah. feel where the gates are.
Yeah. When I bought my Ferrari, the metal gate was installed upside down. Someone had flipped it 180 mm-hmm. out. And that's why it would not go into reverse perfectly, because it's a slight detent for reverse. And all I did was flip it and fixed it.
So wait, did they have two at the top?
One thing,
or was it flipped?
It was flipped, not flipped over like you'd flip a pancake. It was spun 180 degrees.
Yeah. So you're like, oh wow,
because it's basically a perfect H pattern with three, three.
Yeah,
bits,
and there's one little small notch cut out for where reverse is, but you wouldn't immediately notice it if you didn't know to look for it. And so I had it for a day or two until somebody zoomed in on the picture and was like, hey. Is that? But you're right. All I did was spin it around, and the thing fucking went into gear better. It was like,
so I learned all that because
a dog leg first is kind of dumb. It gets way more credit than it's due. Way more.
Well, yeah. I mean, the dog leg was it's okay. It just feels like you're living in whatever era that was made in. But like as far as gated shifters, when I was actually putting this thing together, because the gate was just loose when I got the car, and it wouldn't go into any gear. And I was looking at all the forums because like a bunch of 308 owners, they do all the work themselves. So they go like, oh well, you have to take the trans pan off, and then you have to adjust like these little things, like these adjusters or detents or whatever. And if you over select, like if you literally just put it in gear with the car off and you don't press the clutch in, then you can slide this into a way where it won't go back into gear again. And that's and if you don't have that gate on, then your car is useless. Like you can't drive it.
Oh, well, that's something to know, huh? Yeah, I mean, see something like that is like how to fuck up your Ferrari because you didn't know some shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I just paid Donnie. He knows everything. I don't know.
So you got your
car back and it works.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
You got your Countach back, right?
Yeah, and it works too.
Oh, I know it works. It works wonderful, good. Wonderful car.
It works good. But you, dude, you are so far past me in the collecting of the stupid cars at this point. Like, you are like, what are you on, like 12, 13?
Oh, no, I have 27 cars.
Wow.
Yeah, I got a lot, man.
Holy shit, 27?
Yeah, so I just bought, a lot of people don't know about these. So I got an 06 Corvette Z06. I have an 09 F430 Scuderia.
Really? Where'd you get a Scuderia from?
It needs a little work. So that's the word I would use. Absolutely. I also have I have another Supra, a Mark IV Supra. I'm in the process of buying another Mercy, the other Fast 8 Mercy, the stunt car. So that's on its way from the UK. I don't know. But I think I think if I own the Hero one, I should probably own the stunt one as well. Why not?
Yeah, why not drive up the market? Make it you should pose as someone else and then sell them that way, and then you can they could play you against yourself and you can just win.
I guess so. Actually, have you seen this stupid NFT thing? I mean, you've talked about NFTs on on your Twitter. So this NFT about the S7, what is it, Lycan? The one that's like, they're selling the car, but also an NFT, which is like a collage of everything. And I believe it's like
car that like no one's seen. They're selling a collage.
Because an NFT is essentially a picture. It's a piece of art, right?
Right.
And in order for you to get an NFT like minted, there has to be like a bunch of stuff. Like I don't know what happens. Like it's literally witchcraft happens and then people make money. Like that's all I know.
I have seen some of the dumbest NFT offerings recently. I mean, just people digging through their old shit.
Yeah.
And just like finding some old video they have.
What was it that we saw on Twitter? It was like the Sebastian Vettel like testing footage for Aston or something like that, but you don't own the rights to the footage.
No commercial rights.
You're basically buying like a video clip, yeah, like that someone pulled off of GoPro number 7.
Yeah.
But, you're not really buying. So video clips are very, very hard to do as NFTs. I don't think that there's even like the bandwidth or like that would take a long, long time. But it's usually just like a picture, or it would be like essentially a screenshot, and then the video would be associated with that.
Is it not a video? It says it's the article said footage of this Aston Martin F1 car testing, but is it just photos? That would be crazy. I don't know.
It would have to be a photo, and then like it's representative of the video. So it's like, let's say I wanted to sell an NFT of a video. I would sell, you know, the NFT itself would probably be the thumbnail, and then the video would come as a something else. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I have an iPad that plays the video. Like it's really kind of insane. But to tell you the truth, it's not as crazy as people make it out to be. The prices are nuts, but just because now people want to spend money.
I mean, what I don't understand is, like, I kind of get it. If you're a digital artist, like that, the first, mm-hmm. whatever, I can't, the guy with the funny name, the first one, piece of art he sold.
Beeple, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That, to me, is more like a interesting method of selling a true piece of digital art. And I don't want to get into the what is art, you know, debate. But the idea of, like, let's say, like, Jack Dorsey selling his first tweet, right, for like millions of dollars. Like, obviously, there is a cultural significance to the first tweet, but isn't the first tweet just available for viewing on Twitter? So,
well, in the same way that a Mona Lisa can be available for print, you know,
like, Mona Lisa is one physical object that, in order to really, really experience, you must be in its presence.
Yes, but you can get most of that by just looking at it in a good quality print. So it's the same.
But can't you get the exact same experience from looking at the first tweet on Twitter as you can? What experience can you get buying the first tweet that I can't get on my Twitter feed?
So this is me just like kind of spitballing out of my own head, because I think the experience is just that, like, I own this piece of historical significance, and the person that made this has said I own this, you know. So it's not like the experience is just, hey, look what I have, and that's it. You can say
it's a really weird thing to brag about, but for someone who can buy it, they're just like, yeah, I have that, which probably means they have lots of money, because they're like, look at the shit they're bragging about.
In the same way that you can have your Countach in the Peterson Museum, you're not experiencing that, but you can say, hey, I own that piece. Now, I know a car is different. I know you can go and look at it and everything, but it's like, just if you take away just that ownership aspect, then that's all you get.
That's a good
analogy.
Right,
but the Countach is different, like, because it's, I see it as more like, okay, Freddie, you're a famous artist that made a digital art representation of a Countach, and that art, you know, Zach can log on to Instagram or a web browser or whatever and see that art on his screen, on his computer, on his phone, on his home theater. If I buy that art, I mean, obviously, yes, there's a bragging rights component but if I buy the NFT and I can't commercially license it, what would I do with it in my home or in my gallery or in my garage that is any different from what you could do with it, Zach, for $0?
I think to connect to Freddie's analogy, if your car's in the Peterson, let's say you put your car in the Peterson, you have no intention of driving it for a very, very long time, right? I buy admission to the Peterson, I can go look at the Countach, so I get to see it, but I can just sit there and go, I'm looking at this. You can sit at home and go, I own that thing, which you like.
One of the things that makes NFTs kind of interesting is that they are investable things. So if you own that, now you can sell that NFT. You don't have commercial rights to it. Like, you can't go license it out to the Super Bowl or something, right? But you can sell it, and then whatever profits you make are your own. So if you sell your Countach, that's your money. But, you know, if you have just like a representation of that Countach, like if somebody takes a picture of that, they're not selling your car. You know, it's like, it's a little bit different. It's just about that ownership aspect. And it's weird. in a digital space for sure, because there's no physical medium. And that's why a lot of NFT sellers do include some kind of physical, you know, like certificate of authenticity. They make a nice box and, you know, all that stuff that you get.
There's a lot of, you know, the greater fool theory going on. Like, people are hoping that someone in the future pays more for this. So to go back to the Aston Martin thing, I went to their page. This is crypto.com. And they're selling a bunch of different clips of this. This one's 250 editions minted of Vettel's first run. And it's a video clip. Mm-hmm. As far as I can tell, it doesn't, like, this is a video clip that I am literally watching.
This is literally
right
a
now.
Video clip that we are playing on
their page
right now for $0.
And then if you go to select edition, and if I'm not understanding this site correctly, people can mention in the comments, don't yell. Oh, wait, I want to go back one. So they made 250 editions. And this, I think, allegedly shows what people have paid for these editions. Or is this
nobody paid $10 million?
Right.
I can't.
That's
imagine.
What's so weird. I mean, I'm probably using the site wrong. The first one says 50 grand. The next one says almost a million. The next one says 10 million. The next one says 15.
Oh, okay. None of these are real. None of those are real.
I can't imagine this is real. Right?
No, it's the same thing with that stupid Lycan. So if you look at that Lycan, it got bid up to 500,000 whatever USDC, which is like US dollars.
Uh-huh.
But it's like, I don't know, crypto dude 420. Like, he's not paying 500 grand. Like, this isn't real.
That's people pumping the market, right? Or bots or whatever.
I think it has more to do with that, like, these things are so, like, the venues in which they sell them are so new, and they don't really have any way to realize, like, if these people actually are serious about doing this. So they'll just pump up the market and say, we sold 250 of these for $5,000 a pop, or 10,000, or 10 million, or whatever, even though they're not really worth anything, you know.
Can I give a little props, though? The Lycan Hypersport one, which we have pulled up here, It seems like it actually, the way it's pitched in Car and Driver's article, is that you buy the car and get the NFT for free, and not the not the other way around. Now, I'm not sure.
So if you want to buy,
does that serve the car market? Does that serve the NFT market? I'm not entirely sure. Like, why not just sell the fucking car? What does the NFT do for you? Assuming this car is of any value at all, which if you're fucking Freddy, it most certainly is.
So I know the other two, there were other two cars that came up. One now is owned by Casey Puch. So he is rebuilding one that they made for Fast and Furious Live. And then another one, that one was, you know, found in the UK pretty not too recently. And I've seen that car in person, and not in person, but I've seen that car in action. And I mean, it's the same thing that they have here. It's based on a Porsche Boxster. It's not their, you know, 1,000 horsepower, 1,200 horsepower, whatever roof engine. This is a Boxster with a manual transmission with essentially a body kit over it with a bunch of fiberglass and unfinished carbon fiber. And now they're trying to offload it because, I mean, I don't think, is W Motors a real company? I don't know, but.
I did see, I swear to God, Freddie, last year, I saw one car. They had one in LA. It's not the Hypersport. What's the other one?
Fenrir Supersport.
Yeah, there you go. Good man. Yeah. It was one of them. And it's basically the same kind of thing. It's a Cayman or a Boxster with some like 800 horsepower, you know, roof motor and a PDK gearbox. And
yeah, with diamonds in the headlights
shit.
And yeah. it's so silly. It is so silly.
In Mother Russia, we put a diamond in the headlights.
And then we drive across the border and then we take headlights off.
it's crazy because, like, these cars are have you ever seen, there's been none around a track. And I think there was a Donut Media video about this. So, like, is it a scam? I don't think it's a scam, but it's just like, it's so shady. It's almost like the SSC thing where, you know, they had the car flip over in the trailer. And then now people are freaking out because, like, surprise, surprise, that was the only car. So
wait, what happened to SSC?
Oh, the Tuatara.
Yeah.
The prototype. There was an accident with the transporter. The transporter rolled with the car in
it. Flipped over. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The car got crunched up.
And, And they don't have any other cars. That's their only, like, anytime you see any car with, you know, in any YouTube video or any speed run, it is the car. That's their only one, and they've not made any others. And it's a problem, believe me.
It actually, Zach, the picture in the middle of the top row there, that one right there, it actually doesn't look, yeah, it does, it looks bad. Yeah. When you're looking at a thumbnail, you go, oh, it doesn't look that bad. When you explain it to full fucking things, it looks pretty fucked. It's pretty crunched.
It's anything's savable. And I mean,
entire spare body that they can put on it, it's fine. I bet it, you know, it's mechanically, it's probably okay. But it's pretty, the top is crunched, the roof has holes punched in it. There's like, every body panel is damaged. Mm-hmm. It's pretty trash.
It's going to take a while. It's going to take a while to fix that. Yeah, I think so.
I hate to laugh. That stinks.
It does. But you have to think about, like, these car manufacturers, these super boutique ones, like, they don't have a ton of cars. And sometimes they only have one. You know, so if they're selling one, it is a big deal because they don't have a car company after that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fucking crazy. That's a shitty situation. Wow. Huh?
That's a bummer.
Yeah. How do you think Haggerty insures that? How do you insure prototype?
I mean, you'd probably insure, like, the whoever was driving it, they'd have to have some good insurance.
Yeah, the
transporter.
The transporter, hopefully.
But yeah, I mean, what's the number? Oh, my God, on a prototype like that? Oof.
Well, you can see, look in this photo that Zach's got pulled up. It looks like they're pulling it out of the damaged transporter. And if you look up at the top of the, like, there, it looks like a murder scene inside that transporter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It is.
And you can
see
the sky through the top of the transporter, which is not normal.
Yeah, that's bad.
So, jeez. So I can't prove any of this, but something tells me if it's SSC, they probably got the cheapest transporter they could, and they put like $500 worth of insurance just to get this thing to where it needed to go. And
it looks like a double car hauler because look, it looks like in this photo, like it's coming down off the ramps that would go to the second.
Yeah, the second
level,
story. Yeah,
second level of a hauler, and allegedly it was high wind. So if you've got one of those super super tall joints, having just driven that camper van, dude, when it's blowing 30 in the crosswinds, that shit is mad shady.
Absolutely, but I don't know, man. Hopefully they get insurance money out of that, but man, that SSC has been pretty shady with all their doings.
That sucks. That seems like bad, you know. I don't know about shady. That seems like some
Listen, I'm not saying like this
You're
is
not shenanigans, saying
shenanigans or
something. Right?
No.
Shenanigans, right? Yeah, okay.
No, I'm not saying that this was done like on purpose. That would be insane. That would be like actually be insane. What I'm saying is they would based on what I know about that company and what I've seen, it's more that they would forget to put more insurance on like the standard policy and then be like, oh, what do you mean it's 30 grand per accident? You know?
Shit. Look, we got video from the drive.
Is that being winched out or is it going under its own power?
I don't know. I wonder if it's running. Is there sound on this video, Zach? Let's see if it's running. I don't know. We can't hear it. Hang on.
Ah, man, that's.
Oh,
no, that's a winch.
No, that's a winch. I think that's
or
a winch.
Or it's just a neutral, and there's a slant to everything in there because the truck is broken.
I don't think that car is running.
I don't. It's not on. No. I don't see a line, but I think because the ramp is just tilted for whether it's broken or if they lowered the hydraulics, like it's just rolling because of gravity. It's
gravity.
It's doing the. The Nikola truck demonstration. It's using the Nikola truck technique. That's what it's doing.
Nice.
Oh my God! All right, that's poor.
That sucks. That car is gorgeous. I know it didn't.
Oh yeah,
it broke the record.
Car.
It didn't do the speed that they first thought it was going to do, but it did do like 301 or something, didn't it?
I think it did do.
No.
Did you not do 300 miles an hour? What did it do?
No. So it did an average of 282. And it was, I think it was like high 280s or low 290s in one direction and then 270 something in the other direction.
Yeah. 2.6.
Average of 282.6.
Yeah, and that was like the entire thing of you don't go to 331, and you know when you lie about something, you definitely don't want to lie like way above, you know, you don't want to punch above your weight class. Like, so the Koenigsegg thing was like 277, right? So if they would have like stuck to 279, 280, 282, you know, they would have been totally fine and nobody would have called them out. But they were like, we went 331. It's like, hold on. What, you went 15 miles an hour over?
Do you think they lied, or do you think the GPS company and production company were just incompetent?
I don't think the GPS company was incompetent. I think they were actively trying to, again, this is what I think, so I'm not, you know, but I think they were actively trying to scale it so it was an impressive number. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of evidence to support that, as far as like when you look at the raw video, they basically want the guy to kind of slow down because they see him going at 330 and whatever, like getting to something ridiculous. So I mean, honestly, if he would have kept on going, it would have hit 375, and like it's obviously they're all.
So you think they did what happened in Office Space, where they were supposed to only roll over a fraction of a penny, but
they
were rolling
the
over
slice wrong.
You know, right. To multiply everything by 1.02.
I think that's exactly what they were doing.
Small shenanigans and got big shenanigans, mm-hmm. and then had a situation they couldn't control.
Well, there's a few reasons why. I'm not just talking out of my butt here. So you can look at the actual raw data, and I've talked to everybody that was like kind of in this, you know, scene, and the people who were the skeptics and whatever. So they didn't have more video than what they put out. They put out all the videos, and you can see how the laptop that they had open during that time, which had their GPS readout, and you can have, they also had the readout from the car, and you can see how like there was discrepancies between them. And you can also see that the rate at which they were accelerating did not match up with the rate of like how, like what the gears sounded like in between their gear changes, someone analyzed
the waveform, which is really, really cool.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. So you can see what the gear ratios actually were. So when SSC put out, you know, this whole kind of dossier about like what gear ratios they used, those weren't the gear ratios that they used. They only had one gearbox. There's only one car. So they wanted to save face later on. They said that Devatron, the GPS company, they said that Devatron was, you know, backed up their claims. That wasn't true. Devatron wasn't even there. They didn't have anybody look over the data, and it just ended up being this giant, giant, enormous clusterfuck. And it was just like, it got away from them. And I honestly think that they were trying, they might not have been trying to lie to everybody, but they didn't try to. I'm not going to go into the mind of this, you know, the owner of the company here, but it certainly seemed really shady, because when they got called out for it, they didn't go, hey guys, we messed up, sorry, you know, we had GPS data, turns out it was wrong, and we'll do the run again. It wasn't that. It was, well, the numbers don't lie, you know, we did it, but you know, just to prove all of you guys wrong, you know, it was so stupid. It was so like, you know, I really don't like the way they went about it.
Fair arguments, I think. I think those are fair arguments. I mean, you know, it. I don't know if it was like broken on our show, but it was certainly like the first day, you know, someone mm-hmm. came on our show and said the 330 thing, Castriota. And, you know, it seemed pretty unbelievable, but like we didn't sit here and analyze the video. I mean, it was just like, holy mm-hmm. shit, that's a fucking enormous number. Are you right. serious?
Well, like, we didn't see the video. We mm-hmm. talked to him on the call or on the show. Yeah. And we were blown away, but it's like, look, if the car is slippery and the power is big, yeah. you know, theory, blah, blah, blah. But then once the video came out, like you said, Freddie, like Shmi 150 did a really good analysis, and then some other guys, I can't remember their channel, but we talked about it like the next week.
Like, Robert Mitchell.
Yeah, they did a really, really good analysis of the whole thing, and it didn't look good.
Yeah, and I mean, I talked to Robert. He was at my shop, and we spent like the whole day talking about, you know, he was here for the event because they asked him, and I believe Jimmy as well, to go and check it out. And I'm right here on the sidelines telling tales out of school, so don't take anything I'm saying as any sort of gospel, but it's just kind of like what I've seen. I don't feel like that car could do, like it could potentially do 301 or something, or like just something just north of 300, which is insane, which is like an absolutely insane number. 331, not a possibility. I don't think I can do that.
Well, that's, I mean, yeah. If what they actually did was 282, mm-hmm. 50 miles an hour on top of that is a very big number.
Huge.
That's a huge number. Yeah, I don't think there's enough room, you know what I mean, to do it.
What's the fastest you've ever gone?
Like 215 maybe.
The Jetta?
215.
The Jetta, jeez. I did 211. I topped out an Aventador with Thaddeus. That was about 215, I think. It was an Aventador
215. So most people don't understand how fast 200 miles an hour is.
It's pretty fast.
Because it is like it is so much faster than you have any time. Like, you have no time to do any sort of adjustment or
no.
Or like, if something's coming up, you're hitting it. That's it.
And the difference between like 160, 170, and 200 is pretty noticeable as well.
It is. It's a different world. And yeah. I can imagine like the difference between 200 and 300. Like, it just.
Nope.
What do you do at 300 miles an hour? You're just holding on, right?
Oh yeah. If something goes wrong, that's it. How good is your cell? How good are your seatbelts? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even want any part of it. I was pretty at over 200. I get pretty terrified. It gets real scary real quick.
Well, an aero becomes more and more and more mm-hmm. important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
cars get.
Have you guys heard of the guy? I mean, maybe you brought this up earlier on your show, but there was a guy that was testing out the Veyron and he crashed it at like near the top speed. Like, I think a tire let go or something, and he crashed it.
Yeah, you mean like a Volkswagen employee, right? Like back mm-hmm. in the day, like a yeah. test driver. Yeah. Someone had a big wreck in one of those. I remember. It did make news at, yeah, Bugatti test driver tells a 400-kilometer Veyron crash. Yeah, that's fucking scary.
Imagine going 250 and then going, whoop.
Wow. Tells the tale, though. Walked away.
Absolutely.
That's fucking crazy, dude. That they can build cars that you are going, who's Loris Biacchi?
Bicocci.
Mm-hmm. Oh, excuse me. Bicocci. Go down. Screw that. First test at Nardo.
Oh, that's
and
too bumpy.
Engine and transmission were good. Go down. Was it the tire? Can you do a flat out lap? Oh, my God. Come on. Keep going. Blah, blah,
I
blah.
Think he was at Aralessine.
Tire blue. Yeah,
Nardo. Yeah, of course.
Tire blue at Nardo.
Oh, Nardo.
Yeah. That's fucking so sketchy.
That's crazy.
Super sketchy.
That's probably why they went over to the Air de Lesson, or whatever it's called, the VW yeah, track, yeah, yeah. where they built it mm-hmm. after that. Because Nardo is bumpy, from what I've heard from like Johnny and other people.
There was another note there. They have received an invoice from Nardo Technical Center that said they damaged 1,800 meters of guardrail. Wow. 1,800 meters.
That's a mile.
A mile of guardrail.
That's almost exactly a mile of guardrail.
That's fucking crazy. Imagine that.
Actually, I mean, that's a really smart way to do it, though, because he didn't go off and then hit a tree. Like, he went off, he lost a tire, and then probably put the car into the wall to kind of scrub off speed.
Imagine doing that at 250 goddamn miles an hour. That's so crazy. That's so sketchy. Did you find a cheap Veyron yet? How cheap are they? Are they cheap enough yet? If you sell all 27 cars, you get a cheap Veyron.
Listen, let's talk about something cheery, and that is used car prices right now. How about that? I've tried to find like a hypercar that is, first of all, there's no hypercars that need a significant amount of work. You know, there's none that have been like flipped, and like there's no SSC Tuatara on the market right now, right? But I've been trying to find something that's like, you know, either a Porsche Carrera GT or something like that. If I sold a bunch of my cars, I could potentially afford one of these cars if it had some miles on it. But everything is unobtainium now. It is insane. I mean, like Carrera GT used to be 600, now it's like 850.
Yeah, that happened a few years ago. I called that mm-hmm. one when the 918 came out. They went to 850 and sat there. That's not a 2020 thing. That's a since 918s came out thing. Carrera GTs are the shit, though.
Yeah.
They deserve their the money that they get.
I think so too. Yeah, the one on screen is one I. This is just a guy that I met like locally. He just has like this unassuming house with this small garage, and he has a Carrera GT, an LFA, 4 GT, SL65 Black.
Wow, good for him.
Yeah, it's just crazy collection.
Carrera GT looks like it's on rims too. Interestingly enough,
I don't
look
think
like the stock wheels.
I saw the stock wheels in the back of his garage. I think they're not stock wheels, yeah, but I mean, like it sounded HREs. Great.
Interesting.
Yeah, probably.
Wow, this guy has taste.
Interesting.
Jeez. He likes high tech. Good shit.
Really, really cool guy.
Before, though. They, I mean, if you ever drive one, you go, yeah, this is probably worth $600,000. I mean,
Career GT.
Yeah.
It looks the part. It sounds the part.
Totally unique experience. It's not, you know, mid engine V10, but like totally different from like, you know, Audi or Lamborghini mid engine V10. It's more like a Boxster with a V10 in it than anything else. I mean, it's really batshit. How they are to drive. They're fucking nuts.
No traction control, so, right?
Nothing.
Mm-hmm. If you were to buy, let's say, a hypercar or something, like let's say you wanted to get into that echelon, like what would you buy that is even like remotely reasonable? You know, like I'm not talking about like...
Boy, how big of a asshole do you want me to sound like where I determine what the line is at reasonable?
No,
I
mean reasonable
is a good entry level hypercar price.
Yeah.
So what I mean is value. So it doesn't mean dollar amount. It doesn't matter really. But I'm saying like value. But how much car can you get? You know, because like a Pagani Zonda is what $4.5 million. But I don't think the value really is there, other than it's just a Pagani.
Yeah, well, we've had this discussion before about where it starts to fall off the other side. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like is a Chiron for $4 million, you know, 10 times the value of a Ferrari, which is, you know, $400,000, and is that 10 times the value of an STI that's $40,000? Mm-hmm.
And I think the answer to both those things is yes.
Yes, I think the answer to all those questions, absolutely, unequivocally, yes, it is.
Yes.
No, I mean, I feel like there's diminishing returns after, you know, today's sort of mainstream, you know, supercars. I mean, there's obviously, you know, a difference in performance between like a 918 and some crazy shit like that that's $1 million and what you can get for $200,000. But that difference does not make itself apparent until you have a lot of room to work with.
Right.
On the average canyon road or a track day that isn't like Coda, you know, it's not going to be that enormous of a difference. So,
well, that's why I think the experience is so important. So either, you know, the Carrera GT is, I think, one of the best cars ever made because the looks, it looks good now. Mm-hmm. It looks good when it was made. It'll look good in 50 years. And if you took it back to the 60s, I think it would look cool because it's round. And it also, it's manual transmission. It sounds great. It does all of those amazing things. But the 4 GT, like the you know, the 04 4 GT used to be, it's still cheaper than a Carrera GT.
Yeah.
And it looks really good and it goes fast and it's easier to
drive.
They're
going up in price as well.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
I mean, they were $250 and now they're $350.
Yeah. Buying one of those anywhere between, you know, 10 and 7 years ago at almost any price would have been a very smart thing to do.
So you are one of the only people that I know that has ever driven a Chiron, and I think the Chiron is on my short list of like ultimate money no object cars. So I mean, other than the McLaren F1, which is now $15 to $20 million. But like the Chiron is a thing that now, I think value wise, really sort of makes sense, because a early Chiron, nobody puts the prices because they're really tanked. Like, because you have the Chiron Sport, you have the Super Sport, you have all this other nonsense. But like the base Chiron, which is 1500 horsepower, I think they're like 2 million or a little bit less, which is half off of what they were new.
If that's the case, and I have absolutely no idea, then maybe that is a value because it looks just like the other one. I mean, unless you line two of them up, you cannot you can't go, well, that's a pure sport, and that's a super sport, and that's a, like, right. Mm-hmm. Unless they're sitting next to each other, you have no idea what's the difference, you know?
But it, I mean, it wouldn't matter. It's not like one of them's slow. Like, you know?
No, they're all crazy. The one I drove, yeah. The pure sport that had the close ratio gearbox and shit was fucking insanity. I mean, it was really, really, really next level crazy. But honestly, dude, EVs are fucking shit up. I mean, you know, at under 100 miles an hour, a Taycan is faster than a Chiron, straight up. I mean, maybe not if you came to a fucking stop and did a full bore, you know, drag launch. But like Canyon Road, Taycan is doing everything a Chiron is doing. You know, that EV power delivery, you know, even the most responsive turbocharged engine on the planet.
Right.
Still might have to downshift. Still might have to spool
EV is going to gain or make ground
during that entire time.
Right.
Yeah. During the entire time.
So I think I'm going to date myself here when I say this, but EVs. I mean, this is going to be a get off my lawn moment. I think they're missing something from the experience of the car. And obviously, you know, they don't have the engine, the sound and all that stuff. I think the fact that an ICE car, an internal combustion engine car, has, you know, explosions that you have to meter. And there's like, it's an imperfect thing. As much as you can account for as many variables, it's still an imperfect process. I think that gives internal combustion cars an inherent personality, you know? Mm-hmm. Like you can let off the gas and then you hear something, you feel something, the weight transfer is a little bit different, you know, like there's the turbos take a little bit of time. Like that's something you don't really get from EV cars, and I don't think you ever will. And the fact that you can, you know, work on an internal combustion car, even if it's, you know, a Chiron or whatever, like at the very essence, it's just a car with bolts and pistons and rods, and like it's something that people can get their heads around, versus like, oh well, this is a circuit board and one moving part, and you know, like it's.
Well, that's the challenge that lies in the future for all the EV hypercars is like. Once they all, how do they make them feel different when they all are delivering power through very, very, very similar systems, or at sometimes the exact same system?
Yeah, and I'm not an EV evangelist by like any means. I'm not a fucking, you know, I like my classic cars and I like a lot of the brand new gas cars too. And I fundamentally agree with you, Freddie. I really do. But there's just when I was. In the driver's seat of that Chiron, in between when I hit the gas and when poo came out, in that second and a half, right, foot down, half a beat, then poo came out. In the half a beat, my brain said a Taycan Turbo S would have been gone by now. That's what my brain defaulted to. In that very moment. And then, you know, the ultimate shove. Yeah, the thing makes fucking 1,500 horsepower or whatever, you know, whatever it was. It's insane amount of horsepower. Yes.
Yeah.
And when you launch it and it does a two-gear four-wheel burnout, you go, I see. I see what you have done here. This is madness. What are we doing?
Yes. absolutely. And I get the EV, you know, argument. I'm sure the Taycan is very, very good in many, many ways. But it's just, there's nothing, like there's a reason why I have 27 cars and none of them are EV. And there has to be something that I can kind of cling to as like, all right, this car has like a personality. It has, it has something about it. And I just don't see that with anything other than like, you know what I see it with actually? The Mitsubishi iMiEV. You know that really crappy, like the Citroën Renault.
A bunch of our automotive journalist friends Aaron's have bought, got one. There's three automotive journalists that I know that have those shit boxes. Yeah.
They're real crap. Like they're real, really, really bad. They have a 60 mile range maybe, but they look kind of cool, you know, and it's a very, it's an imperfect EV if you can have one, you know, it's like, you know, they tried to build an EV, by instructions that somebody, you know, told them over a phone with bad reception in a different language. Like it doesn't make any sort of sense. It's very, very slow. It has horrible range. You can't charge it, you know, in any sort of like fast charger system unless you have like some kind of adapter or you modify the car. And it really wasn't well received. It didn't sell very well. But I think for all those reasons, that's why I want one so badly.
You should buy one. You'd be right at home with all the people that I know that buy these fucking terrible cars. I wanted I was an about, EV because I, was about I wanted to buy one, something yeah. not to just not to think about. Just like yeah. I wanted an appliance yeah. for that. And again, it's I'm not trying to say that EVs are better. I'm just saying at that one thing, that yes. instant response, even compared to a $4 million Bugatti, I saw, because the question was in the value. The value is that mm-hmm. that thrust, that fucking mm-hmm. eyeballs in the back of your head, is just as strong in a $200,000 Taycan Turbo S as it is in a $4 million Chiron. Mm-hmm. You launch a Taycan Turbo yeah. S two times in a row, I promise you, you'll be nauseous. Like, you'll be deeply uncomfortable.
Why would anybody want that?
I don't know.
Why would you need this?
Because that's how it works, Freddy. Every
here's a car that makes you physically ill.
Dragster, Freddy. Didn't you know that? Didn't you know that regular people who are leasing cars for $8.99 a month need to do 0 to 60 in two? No, well, you know what? You know why you need that?
Tesla because they all out, right?
The Tesla move where I live is they pull the Tesla into the turn lane and then they fucking just stomp it and they go straight. They go around the traffic. They all just go mm-hmm. into the turn lanes and then just drag race people away from the lights. I see this constantly.
Well, it's also one of the only quantifiable aspects of those cars that you can say to people, like, this is why it's superior to the gas mm-hmm. car, you know, in terms of performance, because especially when the Model S came out, it was so heavy. Like, it's not going to have better cornering. It's mm-hmm. not going to have a better slalom time. But right. you can go look at our party trick, and it makes people feel powerful. And most people don't want to slalom, but they do want to put their friends in the car and hit the gas and go, wee!
No, and I catch myself yeah. in the Mach-E as well, and in almost any EV that I've tested in the past, I drive like a real shitbag when it doesn't. Because if I'm not being offensive, you know, with the noise and stuff... Mm-hmm. Like, why not?
It also feels mm-hmm. like you're not hurting the car. You're not hearing right. revs go up, which right. makes you go, I want to go there. I'm yes. there now. I'm in this position, It's just a light switch.
You know what? This is a weird analogy, but just go with me. So with you in that Mach-E, when it doesn't make any noise and you're like, oh, I can drive like a jerk. If I wear a mask outside, for some reason, my brain goes into I think my entire head is being covered. And then I start like staring at people.
Oh, yeah.
Even though, I start staring at people.
You think you're wearing sunglasses. Like,
exactly.
You're an ostrich. And,
yeah. And then I'm like staring at people with my mask on. I'm like, oh, no. I've done it again, haven't I?
You know what? I've done that too. I think it's because when there's the band wrapped around your ear for the mask, it might yes. trick your brain to thinking like the same part of you that goes wearing yeah. sunglasses. I can just like, you know, look at boobs. It's like, no.
Yeah.
You're wearing a mask. Like, oh, shit.
That would be a horrible
spot.
It might
be because your face also kind of thinks like you've got sunglasses on where you can have mm-hmm. sort of shifty eyes.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, oh, man. That's something I probably shouldn't have said, but okay.
That's okay. It's all right. It's a confession hour. We've got a few questions from the people
cool.
before
yeah,
we get out of here. Mm-hmm. And before we get to them, let's make sure to plug Car Trek 4, which is on the Tavarish YouTube channel right yes. now, as well as Car Trek 3, 2, and 1, presumably.
Yes.
It's still there.
Yes.
And
that's awesome.
In this screenshot, you have really stolen from Top Gear with the slides and the black bars. I just see that.
Well, nice. Well, you know, it's we're trying to go. We're not stealing, anything. We're just trying to that feeling that you get when you watch like season 5. You know, when people think about Top Gear in its heyday. Like, we wanted to recreate that in our own style. So we add, you know, what we can to it, and we recreate some of the stuff that we really liked. So it's just
I like the
like,
bars. I do.
Think
I
of it as a love letter, you know, to that.
It's homaging.
Yes. I think it's just a cool thing you can do in edits. We did it in, I think, one of Magnus's episodes and some other stuff. And it's just like, it's a way to put more information on the screen instead of just going shot.
It's like a comic strip, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Where am I?
Where are you? I gotta you lost yourself?
I gotta go back to the other screen.
Totally lost yourself. Bartek says he can't wait to see the 675 LT finished. How long until that happens? Yeah.
So I just got notice from my body shop that they finished block sanding the first time. They have to do it the next two times. They have exposed all the carbon that's going to be exposed. So fun fact, when you sand down some of the paint from McLaren, like if it's on a carbon panel, they have the actual visual carbon that you pay thousands and thousands of dollars for underneath that paint. But the problem is, it's not as good. So they put their crappy carbon pieces, those are the ones that they send out to paint.
Right.
That
makes sense.
It absolutely
does. Like the perfect
does,
weave, they tint the carbon and they go, oh, it's the bare carbon one. It's, it costs $30,000 extra. And the ones where the fibers don't line up, they just go, orange.
So actually the lining up of the fibers is completely fine. Like they all line up perfectly fine. The thing is they delaminate from the actual gel coat. So you have the carbon fiber layer and then you have gel coat, and there are like teeny tiny air bubbles that form between those things. So it really is kind of like they're just painting their crappy panels. But I think within the next few weeks or so, I should get those panels back. And then comes the very, very fun part of me putting back all the panels, and they're all glued on. They're glued on by a special two-part 3M epoxy that is sold out everywhere. So I had to wait 3 months to get that. And then it's like just gluing things on, hoping it sets, and then hoping everything lines up and measuring panel gaps and doing all that. Yeah.
Wait, if the gel coat is separating from the carbon, even when it's under the paint, it's doing that, presumably, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
So you think over a long enough period of time, those body panels are going to, you know, grow some moles?
So, Zach, I don't know how to tell you this, but McLaren does really bad paint work, and they don't care about any of the finish work in their cars. This is really apparent when you look at any of the cars that they make ever. So they have like paint bubbling. I've had multiple spots of paint bubbling in my car, on multiple spots of paint bubbling on parts I bought from other cars. So I had to like replace panels, and I got like replacement fenders that are made of aluminum, and they had bubbling from the paint because they didn't sand it or they didn't prep it properly. Their carbon fiber work is okay at best. And really, I mean, all their stuff is super wavy. I've seen tape marks where you can see primer underneath. And this is a car that was $400,000 when it was new. And, you know, I'm sure, like, I know a lot of other horror stories where McLarens have gotten paint bubbling, and then you only have to go to McLaren to get those, get the special paint, and it costs something like, you know, $3,000 for a bumper. It's insane.
Supercars.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. The parts on my 328 are very cheap, in case you're wondering.
Oh, yeah.
The paint.
Yeah, 308 was normal. 308 was fine too. Yeah, it's like $50 for
regular old,
you know,
paint.
Regular stuff.
Regular old paint.
Mm-hmm.
Porsche guy says his dream car is a manual GT3, but I can't drive manual that well. What's the best car to learn on that's cheap and I can resell a year later with little to no loss? I mean,
Corolla.
Yeah, I mean anything. I mean
Civic.
You don't have to be picky here. Anything Japanese from 1995 to 2005 will do the trick.
You know what? Those cars are actually getting a lot more expensive now because, you know, people, it's insane. Like, I mean, true. Supras are, you know, the top echelon of that. But, you know, now Supras are hard to find under 60,
which is
insane. But if you wanted to buy something like super cheap, you might even like go American. Like the early 2000s, there's a lot of like four-cylinder cars that you can get that had a manual option. The PT
Probe
Cruiser
GT.
Had a manual option.
Probe GT all day. Yeah.
Well, yeah,
buddy.
Probe GT. Those are going up in price as well, like the 95s and whatever. Yeah, they're hard to find. But like if you wanted to get a PT Cruiser, if you didn't care about how you looked, like that's actually a really, really good. Like it's actually pretty comfortable. It's practical, and you can buy one for $1,000. Who cares if it blows up? You just buy another one.
I would get something that has the pedal space nicely for heel toe, because you're going to need to do that in the GT3. Mm-hmm. So anything that has decent ergonomics.
I think the stuff that you need heel toe for, like you can learn in the GT3. You're not going to break the car by trying to learn heel toe.
No, yeah. You won't. But it'll just, I don't know, have as good an experience, because $10,000 you can buy so many cars.
Dude, first gen SVT Focus.
Yeah, yeah. That's a fun oh, yeah. car.
Or like Z3, pick any used GTI, an old Fiesta ST. There you go. Boom. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chase Beer and Co. Oh, yeah. Thank you, sir. Just a donation. Sean says suggestions for a cheap vintage watch for a poor grad student who spent all his money on a Miata and Fiesta ST. I mean, here's the problem.
Grand Seiko.
Grand Seikos are like this. He says under $200.
Fake Grand Seiko. Grand Seiko.
$200, unfortunately, is like pretty much is like really entry level. So vintage, like you might find some like random like Tissots and Longines and stuff in that kind of range, but they're going to be really small. They're going to be dressy. They're not going to be waterproof. I would say get just like a brand new Seiko 5 Sports or a Seiko SKX. It's going to be $200 to $300, and it's literally the kind of thing you could strap it on and you could wear it every day for the rest of your life and upgrade from there. But you could wear it in the water, you know, the shower. You can wear it to work, and you could smash it into stuff, and it'll survive. A vintage watch, you'd knock it into something wrong, and you completely ruin it, and your $200 watch costs you $1,000 to fix. I don't recommend.
Everything that you just said is something that, like, if you were making 100% of it up, I wouldn't be able to tell.
Confidence, my friend. All confidence.
Exactly. Fake it till you make it, man.
David Bay says, I'm looking for a fun daily, 35 to 45,000. Considering a used Macan S or Giulia Quad. You mean a Macan S, yes. Preference, I would pick a Macan S over any sport sedan. In my review, I will stand by that. Anyone else?
So 35 to 45 grand is like you can buy, I don't know what you can buy now in this crazy economy, but like you can do, like I got my C6 Z06 for 25. And you know,
that's
you
very
can
cheap
buy
for one of those. What's wrong with it?
Nothing. Really? 55,000 miles clean. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's great. But you can get like a lot of other cars. Is it specifically he wanted a crossover?
I think he wants a sedan, or I think he needs four doors based on okay. the selection. Yeah.
So I would do an E-Class AMG or a C-Class AMG, like a newer like 2016 C63 AMG, because you can get those 30s and 40s.
That is a lot of car.
Yeah,
that's
a lot of
a good
car.
Time.
And
yeah.
They turn now.
You might even be able to get into an E63 for that much money.
You're going to get the older one. You're going to get like a 14 with a 5.5 and not the 4.0. The 6.3 is going to have the 4.0. And they had a weird option that you had carbon ceramic brakes, but only in the front. So it's like a little half-half thing, yeah.
Oh, man. Lastly, Carlos says, Freddie, your thoughts on the 2006 Corolla XRS? That's the one with the 2ZZ engine. It's a good one, actually.
Okay. I think I lost you on that last one.
Thoughts on the Corolla XRS with the 2ZZ engine.
Buy it now because it's going to be worth a lot of money in 5 years. It's one of those things that gets slept on, but that like the people that know about that car are only going to increase in their net worth over the next 5 years, and then they're going to care more about that car.
That's like Subaru Baja owners.
Mm-hmm.
The last Subaru Baja sold on Bring a Trailer for like $18,000. People who own those know what they have. Oh wow!
I mean, absolutely.
E63s for under 30 grand. 2011s, mm-hmm. for 30 grand. Here's a 2015 for 38.
Ooh, that's a
good. The 2011 still has a 6.2 that wasn't very good. It had some mechanical issues. You can get those for next to nothing. But like, if you want to get the turbo one, that's the 14 and up, I believe. That's the kind of like the one that Doug DeMuro had for a million years.
Yeah, here's a 15 for 38 grand. That's the one. That's the sweet spot right there. Cool.
Yeah, I think so.
Bro, congratulations on murdering out another season of Car Trek.
Dude, thank you so much, man. Yeah, you gotta do one with us, man. It's a lot of fun.
I didn't know I was invited.
You're always invited.
Yeah, you didn't get the memo.
I didn't get the memo.
You are always invited, man.
Talk to the Auto Tempest people.
100%
have them supply me with a Ferrari. If I have to provide my own car and then destroy it, I don't know if I'm swinging like that right now. But
well, you have a Ferrari. You can always bring.
I'm not going to fucking tear the door off it, you asshole.
It could bolt back on. It's fine.
It looks like you boys are having fun.
A little bit, yeah. We like it.
You can watch that on Tavarish YouTube channel, all four seasons and episode two, which is up right now, and the real Tavarish on Instagram. Are you also the real Tavarish on Twitter, or just what you're the real? Tavarish
yeah, the real Tavarish on Twitter. Yeah.
Thanks, man. Are you gonna be traveling soon? You gonna come see us?
Yeah, I think so. So when my McLaren is done, I really want to do a tour of the U.S. and just kind of like visit all the people that, you know, I haven't seen during this stupid pandemic. So I'd love to bring the car over to you and see what you think.
Sure. Sounds like a good time. I like.
Awesome, man.
All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody, with us live right now. Thank you for joining us. We will be doing a crew show answering your questions Saturday, 2 p.m. Pacific. Join us if you're around over the weekend. If not, we will see you next week. And that's our show. Have a great night.